now my great pleasure to welcome another household name in the world of metabolic surgery, Randy Seeley. Randy is the Henry King Ramsen Professor of Surgery at University of Michigan and the Director of Michigan Nutrition Obesity Research Center.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here to talk to you today. These are my disclosures. The one that's most important for this audience is that some of the studies that you're going to see were supported by Ethicon. I should also disclose, by the way, that all the studies that we're going to see are joint efforts between Darlene Sandoval and myself at the University of Michigan. So we got a really good introduction from Anita about the comparison of between procedures. And any mechanistic conversation has to start with these two common procedures. And what I'd like to point out is that when you just look at them from a mechanical perspective, they don't look anything alike, right? They're really very dissimilar procedures. And it's only by sort of this strange confluence of how we've talked about this, right, with the idea that a gastric, vertical sleeve gastrectomy is just a restrictive procedure, and that Roux-en-Y gastric bypass is restrictive and malabsorptive. Do we try to combine them in some way to say that they're doing the same thing, right? But what I do want to convince you is that even though, they look very different, right, I think Anita gave you a very good basis to think that they're doing things that are in common. Now, again, I'm not going to try to tell you that they're clinically identical by any stretch of the imagination. So somebody will accuse me of that by the end of this, but I'm not trying to tell you that. But what you do when you look across lots of different things that change after surgery, what you see is that lots of things are changing in the same direction, including things that don't look like they would be necessarily part of one piece of the mechanics of one or the other, right? And the point here, right, is that there must be some common underpinnings that are associated with what happens after these surgeries. So I'm going to focus a little bit on vertical sleeve gastrectomy because it's the simpler of the two, and obviously now the more common. And what's clear is that taking away 80% of the stomach has pleiotropic effects on a wide variety of organ systems. And again, I don't have time nearly to go through all of these, but I want to try to make a case for particularly that one of the important things that's happening is changing at the levels of the brain. So I'm going to show you a rodent model of vertical sleeve gastrectomy, and what you see here is that these two groups of animals are maintained in a high-fat diet. Here's a group of animals that are maintained in standard laboratory chow. This group is now going to get vertical sleeve gastrectomy, and what you see is that just 34 days, the animals lost 50% of its body fat. It's lost all of the excess body fat that accrued as a function of being on that high-fat diet. Even though we do not change the diet, right, the animals remain on that high-fat diet. They also have no rat-registered dietitian telling them what they're supposed to do, right? This is the biology of the effect, right? It has nothing to do with what it is the expectations that these animals had about what they're supposed to be doing. The major reason that the animals lose body fat has to do with a reduction in food intake. So what you see here is a reduced food intake in the aftermath of the surgery. But what's important about this slide is that the animals go back to eating what they did before. Right? And I can tell you that when you go in and you look at the animal's stomach at this point and compare it to the animal's stomach at this point, that has nothing to do with physical dilation of that pouch. It is the animal choosing to go back to eating now once it has lost the amount of weight that it sees as appropriate. So again, where's the restriction if the animal can eat 100% of what it did before? I'm going to make this a little bit worse. So this is an experiment where we took female rats, gave them vertical sleeve gastrectomy or sham procedure. And what you see is that, just like in the males, they reduce their food intake over the first 3 weeks, and they go back to eating what they did before. At this point in the experiment, we now make these animals pregnant, and they carry that litter to term. They drop a litter of 10 to 12 pups, and now mom has to feed 10 to 12 pups. In order to do that, she has to double her intake in order to be able to feed those pups through lactation. A mom with a vertical sleeve gastrectomy doubles her intake in order to keep up with that lactational demand. The animal is capable of increasing its intake by 100%. Where's the restriction exactly? Right? So again, the point here is these animals are not physically limited by the size of the pouch that remains behind after a vertical sleeve gastrectomy. Now, again, sometimes this is not just about talking about how much we eat, but sometimes it's about what we eat. And I already told you that one of the weird things about the way we do the animal experiments is that we keep them on the same high-fat diet that the animals were on in order to make them obese and diabetic in the first place. it's weird, right? We don't tell patients, by the way, just keep going through the McDonald's drive-through after the surgery, right? But the reality is, again, in the hands of the animals, it does not matter, right? They don't get a chance to make a choice. But what if we did give them a choice, right? Where they had nobody telling them what they're supposed to do, what would happen? One way you can do this is to give the animals three jars, right? A jar of fat, a jar of protein, a jar of carbohydrate, and let it mix its own nutritionally complete diet. If you do that, what would you expect if the animal is really, if the procedure was restrictive, right? Well, what you'd expect is that the animal should now start consuming more fat. Why? Because that's the way to fit the most calories into that small pouch. What actually happens is exactly the opposite, which is that the animals actually reduce their preference for fat and increase their preference for carbohydrate. Now, I will tell you something, and most of you know, right, that patients often report that things are sweeter now than they used to be, and sometimes they're avoiding sugar as a result. The carbohydrate source here is largely starch. It is not very sweet, and that, I think, probably accounts for what you see here. Now, if you do a comparison between Roux-en-Y gastric bypass and vertical sleeve gastrectomy on this rather odd measure, what you see is that both of them result in exactly the same outcome. Reduced consumption of fat and increased consumption of carbohydrate. Again, I bore you with this because the point here is that there is a biological effect of the surgery that is largely weight independent that alters the animal's food choice, right, and the way it views. And that implies, right, that there is important effects on the CNS circuitry that is involved in food processing that changes in these animals. Now, if you believe me, right, that there's these large pleiotropic effects that I'm not going to go through, you start thinking that maybe surgery has different impacts on some endpoints than you might have suspected. And let me try to walk you through one, right, which is on breathing. So everybody here appreciates that sleep apnea is a very important component that goes with patients that have obesity. And it's an important risk factor for a variety of things. And the usual way we talk about the way obesity increases risk is a physical explanation with the idea that additional weight on the airway leads to more likely for it to collapse. That is crazy, right? Just as a functional conversation, right? I won't give you all the reasons why it's crazy, but I'll show you in a minute here why it is that it can't be the only explanation. So again, I think we should stop thinking about sleep apnea as something about not being able to can't breathe, but rather a change in the drive to breathe. And I'll try to make that case for you. So what's known about bariatric surgery and sleep apnea? It's clear that sleep apnea is significantly improved after bariatric surgery, though the follow-up times for most of these studies have been around a year, right, where you actually do a sleep study. But even within 30 days, you can see reductions in excessive sleepiness. And again, it's not the same across procedures, right? So vertical sleeve gastrectomy and Roux-en-Y are better than gastric lap band at producing remission of sleep apnea. So here's the experiment I'm going to show you, right? So we put mice in a plethysmograph that allows us to be able to monitor their breathing and to change the relative ratio of carbon dioxide and oxygen in the chamber. And what you see is that the hypercapnic ventilatory response, right? The ability of the animal to increase its breathing in response to increased doses of carbon dioxide are altered in obesity. So again, patients with sleep apnea have a lower HCVR. And what you see is that in obese mice, they also have a lower HCVR. They're not getting apneic, but you can see that their drive to breathe has been altered. And the question for us is whether there's a change after vertical sleeve gastrectomy. So the experiment here is to take several sets of animals that are on a high-fat diet versus animals that are on chow. Some of these animals are going to get vertical sleeve gastrectomy. And another group is going to get a sham procedure, but they're going to have their food restricted so in fact that they lose exactly the same amount of weight as an animal with a vertical sleeve gastrectomy. If you look at their plethysmograph data beforehand, this number here corresponds to the slope of the line, right, as they're increasing their breathing in response to increasing amounts of carbon dioxide. And what you can see is that all the animals on a high-fat diet have a reduced level of response to increase carbon dioxide. But what's interesting is we now look at animals 3 weeks after surgery. You can see that the animals who had vertical sleeve gastrectomy have entirely normalized this response, but the animals who didn't get surgery have not, including an animal that has lost weight. So what I'm pointing to you is that in this mouse model, there is a weight independent effect of vertical sleeve gastrectomy to change the drive to breathe. Right? So again, this is not about mechanics, right? This is about changes in physiology, including in the central nervous system, that alter the chemosensitivity to carbon dioxide for these animals. So again, trying to make a case, right, that there's lots of commonalities between vertical sleeve gastrectomy and Roux-en-Y gastric bypass. And some of those commonalities are not just things that are positive. Matter of fact, Anita already alluded to one of the things that's quite negative, which is that you see increasing rates of iron deficiency. And I just want to make a case that this actually happens across a lot of different procedures. This is a rat model in which we did a side-by-side comparison, a single anastomosis duodenal switch, vertical sleeve gastrectomy, Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, and mini gastric bypass. And you can see that all of those, they have lower iron and increased reticulocyte counts, right? There is an alteration in iron that, again, I would make an argument is not necessarily weight dependent. Now, is this a feature or a bug? And let me first try to convince you that what's happening here is a planned response of the system rather than something that is merely accidental from the inability to absorb iron. So if you remember, in order to get iron into the system, right, you have to have a whole coordinated set of changes, right? One is you have to make convert iron to the appropriate form by an enzyme called DCYTB. It has to get transported in from the lumen by a transporter called DMT1. And then, of course, it has to get transported back out of the enterocytes by a transporter called ferroportin. Now, ferroportin can be inhibited by a hormone called hepcidin that can help reduce iron absorption in situations where the iron is too high. Now, what you need to know about this is that this entire system, all of these genes, are under the control of a single transcription factor called HIF2-alpha. And when we went and did an experiment where we looked at the duodenums of either animals who had vertical sleeve gastrectomy or a Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, now again, you'd expect the duodenums to be really different between these two situations, since one is seeing no food and the other is seeing a lot of food. And that is reflected. Now, when we do RNA-seq to look at all the genes, you can see that there are wild differences between the two. But one set of genes comes out to be regulated in the same manner, right? And they are HIF2-alpha and all of the target genes that are involved in iron regulation. So again, there is a common element in both vertical sleeve and Roux-en-Y to upregulate HIF2-alpha and its signaling. Now, let me try to prove to you again that the iron differences here are real and purposeful. And what I mean by that. So here, what you see here are animals that are either on a normal iron diet or on a diet in which we have elevated the several-fold the amount of iron in the diet. And what you see is the animals don't end up with more iron because they regulate this, right? Iron is toxic. The animals don't absorb more. An animal has a vertical sleeve gastrectomy, you can see has lower iron. And over-supplementing the iron does not completely repair the differences in iron. But when you look at the hepcidin levels, right, the response element to elevated iron, what you see is that in the sham animals, you don't need to elevate your hepcidin levels in order to respond, right? You can change your absorption at the level of your gut, and you're just fine. But an animal who has a vertical sleeve gastrectomy has dramatically elevated hepcidin levels in response to higher iron. Why is that interesting? Because what you see here is the iron levels are still low. They're not high, right? Yet the animal now is responding as if they're high. The point here is that the animal after a vertical sleeve gastrectomy is not randomly having its iron be low. It is the biology believing that that iron should be lower and, in fact, is working hard to make sure that it stays low. So keep that in mind as you're lambasting your patients about whether they took their iron supplements or not, right? Because it could very well be that they are, and that is not it is not their fault, in fact, that the iron levels are still low. Now, does this matter? So I'm going to show you data around looking at HIF2-alpha in particular, and this is something we've been doing with Yatrik Shah in the Department of Physiology at Michigan. And the first thing we noted is that when you put animals on a high-fat diet and make them obese, their HIF2-alpha signaling goes down. So here what you see is staining for HIF2-alpha, and here what you see are the reduction in the target genes for HIF2-alpha. So the point here is there's an iron-independent effect to regulate HIF2-alpha by exposing these animals to the high-fat diet. And again, like I said, when you now expose animals to a vertical sleeve gastrectomy, you completely reverse that effect, and now we can turn back on that HIF2-alpha signal. So we know that VSG is a model where we can increase HIF2-alpha signal that's associated with all these good things. Is there a way we could try to simulate that by not using surgery? So let me just show you one version of this, right? So HIF2-alpha does its work by going to the nucleus in order to change expression of lots of genes. One way you keep it from doing that is to actually, it gets targeted for degradation. One of the key parts of that targeting for degradation is a a protein called von Hippel-Lindau. And what we did was to make a gut-specific knockout of von Hippel-Lindau. The result of that is to stop the degradation of HIF, more of it goes to the nucleus, and you get increased HIF signaling. And that's what you see here, right? So again, this is some of the target genes. You can see they're greatly upregulated. When you do that, what you get is an animal that weighs less when you put it on a high-fat diet, eats less, has reduced body fat, improved glucose tolerance, and the killer is an increase in GLP-1 secretion, just like happens after both vertical sleeve gastrectomy and Roux-en-Y gastric bypass. So we've got two models now in which we've increased HIF2-alpha and seen the positive effects. Well, what if we just did this by lowering the iron levels, right? So now we're going to challenge animals with reduced iron diets, and what you see is you get upregulation of HIF2-alpha signaling, you get reduced body fat, body weight on a high-fat diet, reduced body fat, reduction in food intake, an improvement in glucose tolerance, and an increase in GLP-1 secretion. So the point here is that across a wide range of different manipulations that involve increasing HIF2-alpha, you get to see effects that simulate what happens after surgery. Now, in my last couple of minutes, I'm just going to make one more point for you, which is, again, this conversation about what is it that's similar about these two procedures that might lead to these changes in the HIF signaling and other kinds of physiological effects I've been describing. Well, one of the things that's the same is has to do with gastric emptying. So these are barium swallows in a normal animal, right, that has a normal stomach, and you can see that 5 minutes after you gavage the animal barium, 90%+ of what you gave the animal is still in the animal's stomach. If you look at a Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, 90%+ is left the stomach in just 5 minutes, and that is absolutely true for vertical sleeve gastrectomy as well. And so the question becomes, is this important? And my argument here is that part of what you're doing with bariatric surgery is to change the ability of the stomach to protect the intestine, right? You are stressing the intestine in a variety of ways that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And again, in this way, a common way between the two is the fact that you have high gastric emptying rates. So if that's true, then there should be other ways to stress the GI tract that should also be effective. And I'm going to tell you, we went through lots of different versions of this, but I'm going to just show you one that was particularly effective. So this is a partial jejunal diversion, where in fact we do a side-by-side anastomosis, which allows food to take a shortcut and bypass a large segment of the intestine. But again, this is not a blind loop, right? So some of the food continues to move through this longer loop. When we do that in rodents, you see a 50% reduction in body fat and a nice improvement in glucose tolerance. We decided that this procedure was straightforward enough that we could potentially do it in humans, and Dr. Martin Fried in the Czech Republic agreed to lead this study. This is a single-arm study, 15 patients with obesity and diabetes, and 12 of them were already on insulin. But despite that, what you see is a reduction in A1C of 2.3 points over 12 months, an improvement in glucose tolerance, and about a 10% reduction in weight. And by our calculations, this 10% reduction in weight can't really account for all that 2.3% reduction in A1C. Now, I know surgeons, right? I'm married to one. And I guarantee you that there is somebody in this audience sitting here thinking, wow, that partial jejunal diversion is interesting. What if we added a restrictive component to it, right? If we did vertical sleeve and partial jejunal diversion. So again, from my perspective, that makes no sense, right? If the idea is that we're stressing the intestine, doing it two ways doesn't help you do it better than the other. So again, we tried to do this in rodents. So this is a comparison of vertical sleeve to what's now called PID here in some of these slides. And what you see is that vertical sleeve gastrectomy is more effective in terms of weight loss than PJD. But when you combine the two, you get no additional effect on fat mass. You get no additional effect in terms of improvements in glucose. This is the area under the curve. This is fasting glucose. And no additional improvements in total plasma cholesterol or plasma triglycerides. Again, from my perspective, that makes sense, right? That what you're doing is forcing that adaptation. And whether we do it by doing the anastomosis or removing parts of the stomach and increasing the gastric emptying rate, you're still getting some of the same downstream effects. So again, they're not necessarily going to add the way we talk about restriction and malabsorption potentially being added. Now, again, I do think there are some, nobody should be thinking that we're going to be doing this procedure anytime soon, but it does beg to the point, which is that once we understand how it is that surgery works, our ability to try to make combinations or other approaches that do not simulate pieces of what surgery does today, but rather hits the effective parts of the molecular machinery correctly. I will stop there and point out the obvious, which is I didn't do any of the work you just saw. It's done by this talented group of folks at the University of Michigan. Thank you very much for your time.